You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
Hello everyone, a warm welcome along to the first ever edition of the UFC podcast here with William Hill ahead of UFC 204 in Manchester. It should be an historic evening in Manchester, and I'm delighted to be joined by sports writer and BT Sport pundit Gareth A. Davis ahead of UFC 204. Good afternoon to you, Gareth.
Good afternoon, Dave. It's the first one that's being played out in live pay-per-view time in the United States. So it starts at 11 o'clock at night. Dave, I don't know if they're going to be awake all night. It starts at 11 o'clock at night. The main card starts at 3 a.m. and it'll go through till 6 in the morning on Sunday morning.
I have seen these times and I enjoy the UFC, Gareth, and I've been thinking, should I stay awake for these fights, which are in the early hours of Sunday morning here in the UK? It looks like a decent card, a good quality card, and of course Michael Bisping versus Dan Henderson headlining. And it's an exciting period for the UFC, Gareth. The company is growing at a rapid rate now. And with this event at Manchester, and we're going to speak about the upcoming supercard at New York in the future as well, involving Conor McGregor, good time to be involved in the MMA business.
Listen, it just sold. The UFC bought those three letters and the fight company 16 years ago for $1 million, and they sold it late this summer for $4 billion US dollars to IMG WME, and it's the biggest sports franchise sale ever in sports history. That's how big it is. And honestly, I've been covering the sport now for 10 years on TV, radio, and of course with the Telegraph, and it's never been bigger, and it is slowly and incrementally growing around the world. This is a big card because Michael Bisping has become the first ever British winner of a UFC world title belt. And of course, he gets to defend it in Manchester. In American time, maybe, but that's the way it's worked out.
That's the headline event, the last fight on the card, UFC 204 from Manchester. We've got four fights priced up on the main card here with William Hill. Check out all the betting at williamhill.com and click on the UFC page. We start with Daniel Omalinchuk versus Stefan Struve, a heavyweight clash here. Couple of heavyweight veterans doing battle on Saturday night, Gareth. Struve is 27-8 in his career, a tall, tall man, nicknamed the Skyscraper, standing at 7 feet. Hasn't always used his reach effectively, but in his last few fights, he seems to have changed his style slightly, and he's now being a little bit more deliberate in his attacks, and it's working out for him as well.
Look, I know him really well. He's been through heart problems in the last couple of years. He's fit again. This is a guy, remember, who began his UFC career in the heavyweight division at the age of 20, remember, against Junior Dos Santos, the former UFC heavyweight champion. Look, he's been up and down in his career, but as you say, he's learning to use that incredible 85-inch reach, and he's training now out of Black Zillions with Bob Schreiber, of course, his Dutch coach as well. But Struve is a good friend of mine, the 7-foot-tall Skyscraper, of course, as you call him. He is on the cusp of fighting, in my view, for the world crown. He's got a victory over the current world heavyweight champion in the UFC, Stipe Miocic, back in Nottingham 4 years ago. He just needs a run of form at the moment. He had a fantastic win against Bigfoot Silva, 16-second knockout in Rotterdam in May. He's flying high right now. I think this is a good fight for him against Emelianenchuk. I think the one thing that he's got in this, he's got a 1 foot height advantage and reach advantage. They've been working hard on his wrestling at the Black Zillions. They've got a terrific team there, but also, as you say, he does get involved in a scrap. He likes to get involved, but he has been learning to use that powerful jab to keep people away. I see him as a massive favorite in this fight. I mean, his opponent, of course, is going to be difficult. All these guys are at the top of the food chain. The thing is about Emelianenchuk, he is on a 3-fight winning streak himself in the UFC at the moment. He lost his first two, his second and third fights in the UFC to Jared Rosholt and Anthony Hamilton. But he's a typical Eastern European fighter, likes to get involved in a brawl. He's a veteran, 26 fights himself. But I see Stefan Struve as the clear winner in this fight on Saturday night.
Stefan Struve is 8-15 here to win the fight. Emelianczuk is in the betting at 6-4. The problem, I think, for Emelianczuk here, Gareth, is he's not got really true heavyweight knockout power. He's got a tendency to win his fights with volume of punches he throws. And Struve has often struggled with opponents that get into him on the inside as well. So that's something Emelianczuk will definitely look to achieve.
Yeah, definitely. But the thing is, Struve has got genuine knockout power as well, as we saw with his elbows against Bigfoot Silva in Rotterdam. Look, Struve is confident. He's got a clear game plan for this. I saw him earlier in the week in the Fighter Hotel in Manchester. He feels very good about this. And I think there is that, as I said earlier, there's that fillip of he only needs two or three victories in the UFC heavyweight division because he's an easy matchup to make with Stipe Miocic, who currently holds the belt, and it will be an easy fight to make. I see Struve, unless he makes mistakes, and as you say, allows Emelianczuk in on the inside, he gets the job done. And I think he gets it done within two rounds as well. Remember, a jab in the heavyweight division with those four-ounce gloves can change a fight in a moment in the UFC.
Let's move on to Jimmy Manua versus Vin St. Preux. This is the second fight on the main card, and Jimmy Manua is the 11-8 outsider here. Vin St. Preux is 4-7. We've got method of result, round betting, and you can bet on whether the fight will go the distance on the William Hill website as well. Vin St. Preux, Gareth, is a very athletic light heavyweight, a decent 19-8 record in his career. Often faltered, though, against the elite light heavyweights in the division. And that was the case against John Jones, who beat him in his last fight in UFC 197 by unanimous decision. But it's not just the athleticism that Jimmy Manua's got to worry about here. He's got a powerful kicking action of Vincent Preux, and he's a southpaw, and southpaws can be notoriously difficult to fight.
Yeah, Ovin St. Preux, look, he's had a lot of fights now. We know that he's, as you say, he's incredibly athletic. He was a track athlete, a wrestler, and an American football player in his high school and collegiate years. He's got 9 knockouts, 5 submissions, and 5 decisions in his record, so he's very rounded. He gave John Jones a few issues in John Jones's comeback when he lost that decision to him in April at UFC 197. But you know, I do agree. I think St. Preux is the marginal favourite going into this contest. Jimmy Manor, of course, we know what he is. He likes a fight. He's an all-out fighter. Kicks, punches, strikes. Doesn't really want to go to the ground. The danger for Jimmy in this fight is St. Preux takes him to the ground. St. Preux is tricky because he's a southpaw. You're correct. I think Jimmy has the advantages in the stand-up, Dave, but I do think that Manua needs a victory. He's 1-2 in his last 3 fights. He obviously lost to Anthony Johnson, who's a handful for anyone. Good victory over Jan Blachowicz, and of course, the loss to Alexander Gustafsson in London in March 2014. Jimmy needs to get back on track. Tough night for him at UFC 191 in September against Johnson. But I think if he can get hands on Ovin St. Preux, he wins the contest. But I do say, I go with the odds on this. I do think Ovin St. Preux can get this job done. The danger for St. Preux is if Jimmy lands, he knows how to finish. It's a great, great fight in the light heavyweight division. It's also great for Manua, a victory in this in the UFC fighter rankings right now at light heavyweight. Jimmy's ranked 8, Ovin St. Preux is ranked 5. Jimmy gets the victory here. He jumps up the ladder there. Snakes and ladders in the UFC rankings. He jumps up to 5, and a title shot would not be far away.
Do you think it goes the distance, Gareth?
No, I don't think so with these two. Unless Ovin St. Preux decides that if he gets caught early and he feels Manua's power and he goes to the ground, he could end up smothering Manua on the ground for a couple of rounds. But yeah, it could go the distance, actually, thinking about it. But I think if it goes the distance, it's a St. Preux victory.
Yes, for it to go the distance is 100-30 here with William Hill. Vin St. Preux by decision, 6-1 in the betting. All the betting available on the William Hill website. Let's move on and have a look at Gegard Mousasi versus Vitor Belfort in the middleweight division. Mousasi, a strong favourite here with William Hill at 2-7, with Vitor Belfort at 13-5. Mousasi so far in 2016 has earned back-to-back victories. And if it wasn't for a knockout loss suffered against Uriah Hall just over a year ago, Mousasi would be riding a 5-fight win streak now. He's 4-1 in his last five. And Belfort, Gareth, hasn't been in action much in the last 18 months. He's only fought three times since May 2015, with his only win coming against Dan Henderson, who we'll speak about shortly. Belfort, 39 years old now, Mousasi, 31. There's got to be a chance, and I think there is, that Belfort is slowing down.
Oh, there's no question about that, but he remains, Vitor Belfort, again, another southpaw, very, very heavy hands and feet. He has knocked out so many of his opponents. Remember, you know, he was a heavyweight years ago in he won the UFC 12 heavyweight tournament final back at UFC 12 in 1997, Dave. That's how long he's been around now. Yes, he is slowing down. Yes, he has been affected by, he's not allowed TRT exemption anymore. It's had an effect on a lot of the guys. I think, you know, his losses to Chris Weidman and Ronaldo Souza, Jacare Souza, in 2015 and 2016 show where he's at right now. You know, it's a tough fight for him because Mousasi makes very, very few mistakes. He's a very technical fighter. He's brilliant on the ground. He's brilliant in transitions. The danger for Mousasi is that Vitor gets in close early because he is one of the most dangerous finishers in all of the UFC. That's where I see the opportunities for Vitor early on in the fight. The longer the fight goes, and it's a 3 5-minute round fight, remember, the longer this fight goes, the more it's Mousasi's to win on points. Vitor's opportunity is to get the job done early. If he doesn't get it done early, there's danger of him because Mousasi will wear him down.
Gegard Mousasi on points is 9-2. You mentioned TRT exemption, Gareth. What exactly is that?
Well, it's a therapeutic use exemption for testosterone levels because some of the fighters were able to take that in the past because their testosterone levels were low, but they are no longer allowed to do that. And people around the world, the fans, see Vitor Belfort as a different type of fighter now that that isn't permissible for these guys. You know, it could be a coincidence. It could be the fact he's got older, but he's clearly slowing down, and he's more vulnerable as a fighter. There was a time when he looked invincible. It's a difficult one. Both these guys are very still powerful contenders in the UFC middleweight division. If you look at the rankings, Vitor's number 5 and Gegard Mousasi's number 9. So it's a massive opportunity for the European to move up the rankings here. And you never know. Sometimes on these cards, when you have two middleweight fights as co-main and main events, you see the winners meet each other. Gegard Mousasi could get a victory here. And even though Michael Bisping is calling out people like Chris Weidman as the next contender, if Bisping wins on Saturday night, Gegard Mousasi could put himself in the frame with a victory over Vitor Belfort. That'll be in the back of his mind.
Gegard Mousasi to win the fight is 2-7, Vitor Belfort 13-5. Going with Gegard Mousasi, are you going on points or by way of knockout or technical knockout?
If Vitor Belfort doesn't get the fight won early, I see Mousasi winning by points after three rounds, Dave.
9-2, Gegard Mousasi to win the fight on points. I think it's important in this matchup that he looks to take Belfort, restricts those advances and takes Belfort to the ground because you mentioned it early on in the piece, Gareth. That's where Mousasi does most of his damage. Ground and pound game, one of the best in the middleweight division.
But also, Dave, what Gegard does very well, he controls distance very well. Vitor likes to rush fighters. He does carry, as I say, he carries dynamite in his hands early on in the fight. He's got one of the most devastating finishing potentials of anyone in all UFC pound for pound. But Gegard is very, very clever at his both his movement in the octagon, but also his controlling of poise, precision, and efficiency. He's not easy to get on the inside on, but having said that, look what Jacare Souza did to him. You know, gave him a kind of nightmares on the night they met back in September the 5th, 2014 at UFC Fight Night, Jacare Mousasi in Mashantucket, Connecticut. Souza was too much for him. That's what Vitor will have to do. He'll have to storm the barricades early against Gegard to get some success in this contest. He does gas Vitor, I think, in the second and third rounds, and that's when Gegard will come into his own.
Let's move on to the main event of the evening in Manchester, UFC 204, Michael Bisping versus Dan Henderson. And Bisping 2-5 to win the fight. Henderson is 19-10. Can't mismatch up this one with the title on the line. And there's plenty of bad blood between the two as well, because Dan Henderson famously knocked Michael Bisping out back in UFC 100 in 2009. But Dan Henderson, now 46 years old, coming into this fight and a revenge matchup for Michael Bisping. He would love to knock Dan Henderson out the way Henderson did back in UFC 100.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't see Michael doing this early if he is going to knock Henderson out. Look, it's 7 years, as you mentioned, since they fought. I remember sitting octagon side that night in Las Vegas. Bisping was very nervous all week. He knew that if he won the fight, he would go. It was almost a title eliminator, and he would get a shot at the middleweight title held by Anderson Silva at the time. A lot of water and fights have passed under the bridge since then, David. The thing is, Dan Henderson, since that time, is 7 wins, 7 losses in his UFC career. Michael Bisping has gone up and down, but only this year has gone from strength to strength. A victory over Anderson Silva in London. A rematch against Luke Rockhold, who'd stopped him in Australia, to claim the belt. So it's a very different landscape. Bisping, in his mid-30s now, knows how rounded he is as a mixed martial artist. He's become much quicker on his feet, much more aggressive in the last couple of years. There is always that cocked right-hand hammer of Henderson's that can finish anyone, and even when he's really, really hurt. He has killer instinct in the octagon. He knows how to finish fights, and that is going to be the danger for Bisping. But what I think is his best opportunity is to start quickly, to pepper Henderson, to move around the octagon, to move the right way, as he didn't do that time when he was knocked out by a big right hand. And I think slowly he can break Henderson down. And I could see him finishing Henderson in the third or fourth round in this fight. I went up to see them both on Tuesday this week, Dave. I had interview time with both of them for TV shows for BT Sport and for previews for The Telegraph. And I really had the sense that Michael Bisping is so up for this. It's a peculiarity that they're both staying on West Coast time. They're both training late at night. Bisping is so up for this. He wants the revenge. He says it's not even a rematch. It's just a different fight altogether. He, I think, is at the top of his game right now. He has achieved everything he ever set out to do. He's beaten one of the greatest mixed martial artists of all time in Anderson Silva. He's won the UFC middleweight belt this year. Now, if he could claim revenge in our eyes, maybe not even in his, over Dan Henderson and finish him in the third, fourth, or fifth rounds in this fight, it would cap an incredible year in 2016 for him.
How do you explain his improvement in 2016, beating two living legends in Anderson Silva and, you mentioned, Luke Rockhold in UFC 199? Clearly been a special 12 months for Michael Bisping. How do you explain it?
Bisping is testament to try, and try again. He's matured as a fighter. Everything seemed lost. He put everything on the line against Anderson Silva. He's met Anderson Silva later in the Brazilian's career, which I think was to his advantage. It was a very close fight. Bisping battled back from being knocked down, of course, in that fight and very hurt. But he has always had this desire to be a groundbreaker. He's done it. He was the first British fighter, the first overseas fighter to win an Ultimate Fighter Series, Tough 3. He was the first British fighter to win a world title against Luke Rockhold. And I think he won that because he wasn't worried. He came in on a few weeks' notice. He did a little bit of training. He's incredibly ambitious, Mike. He doesn't know the meaning of defeat. And I think he went out there and put it all on the line in both of those fights. And it worked for him. Anyone can win in MMA. A beats B, B beats C, and C beats A. It's the way it rolls. It's a complex sport with so many ways to win and so many ways to lose. That's why this is still a dangerous fight for Michael Bisping. When I spoke to him on Tuesday, he was saying, look, I know that Dan could knock me out with his right hand, but I have got to keep to my game plan and I will wear him down and stop him. It's a fascinating scenario because Henderson, who is a 20-year legend in this sport, all the way from Pride into the UFC, is still a dangerous man. He's got these incredible skills, these incredible survival instincts. Henderson's saying, by the way, Dave, that if he wins this fight, he will still retire at the end of it. So he'll retire with the middleweight belt. But you know what? Don't believe him. Because if he does win, the UFC will persuade him back. They might even drop a couple of noughts on the end of his contract for it.
It is one of those fights where, as you mentioned earlier, he's got to be aware of that right hand. And in the previous fight, I know we're going back 7 years now to that previous fight back in 2009. I think his trainers were disappointed that he didn't stick to the game plan and move left-handed around the octagon exactly onto that right hand of Henderson. I'm sure he's not going to make that same mistake.
He cannot make that mistake. The danger is with Henderson, when he clunks you, you don't know where you are. And that was the problem in that first round back in 2009. Bisping was being stalked by Henderson. I expect him to engage more this time, in and out quickly. That's the way he's got to do it in this fight. Much like he fought Chris Lieben in Birmingham a few years ago. He's got to go in and out. He's got to land his shots, get out again, and maybe even take Henderson down a few times as well, and just mix up his game a bit more. Michael Bisping's wrestling is much underrated. We know he's brilliant defensively wrestling, but he's very good on the takedown as well. He may even exact a ground and pound finish in this fight, but I think if he's got Henderson hurt in this fight, he will finish him. It would not surprise me to see Michael Bisping stop Dan Henderson in this fight, Dave.
Michael Bisping by KO or technical knockout is 11-10. You mentioned rounds 3 and 4 for Bisping as well. Bisping to win in round 3 is 7-1. Bisping in round 4 is 10-1. Gareth, that brings us to the end of this first podcast. Looking forward already to UFC 205, where Conor McGregor is back in action against Eddie Alvarez. That promises to be a special evening.
Oh, it does. I mean, it's the first time that UFC will go to Madison Square Garden. It will be amazing. But of course, we've got two events between that. And I know that we'll be speaking on the week of October the 15th. Next week, we'll speak as well, because that's going to be headlined by Derek Lewis and Marcin Tybura. So UFC Fight Night 97, and then we've got the Ultimate Fighting Championship in Mexico, and then of course we come to Alvarez and McGregor, which is going to be amazing for the UFC lightweight crown. Tyron Woodley defending his welterweight title on that card against Stephen Thompson as well. I'll be in New York all week for that. And Joanna Jędrzejczyk fighting Karolina Kowalkiewicz, defending the women's strawweight belt. Three world title fights on one card. It is going to be amazing. Chris Weidman fighting Yoel Romero as well. We'll talk about it in detail in the coming weeks, but it is a massive card for a historic night, with the UFC finally getting permission to fight, to have an event at Madison Square Garden.
Superb. Gareth A. Davis. You can follow Gareth on Twitter as well, at Gareth A. Davis DT. You can follow myself at D. Kellner. And as Gareth has mentioned there, we will be back in the very near future for more previews on this UFC podcast. Gareth, thank you for your company.
Always my pleasure, my friend.
Get a £5 free bet every week with Offer Club from William Hill.
Hey-o, let's go, let's go.
Simply stake a total of £20 or more across the week on pre-match football accumulators with four or more selections, and you'll get a £5 free bet on the Friday. Plus, you can get on faster and easier than ever with our new and improved mobile betting experience. Join William Hill Offer Club on mobile or online now. When the fun stops.